Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Charlie Cook of National Review. And for Jim Garrity today, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. And Charlie, it's always good to have you. It's especially good to have you today for our good martini to provide your expert analysis on what happened in Parliament yesterday as Prime Minister David Cameron kind of embarrassed by the fact that his push for assisting the U.S. in a limited, targeted, whatever adjective you want to use, strike against Syria in response for their using of chemical weapons was defeated. It was close, but it was defeated. And I saw one unsubstantiated report that it might be the first time the Parliament has rejected a governmental request for military action since the end of the American Revolution. So take us inside what happened here and what the significance of this is inside British politics, and obviously for what Obama wants to do here.
Well, I think this was a very big decision in an awful lot of ways. In fact, I think that 1784 vote that you alluded to is the last time. It's not the last time that Britain has refused to help the United States, or in fact the United States to help the British. Talk of the end of the special relationship, I think, is probably a little premature. The British refused to get involved in Vietnam, for example, and the Americans wouldn't get involved with Suez. But it is nonetheless a big moment, and I think it possibly shows the extent to which Obama is on his own here. It's not a popular move in the United States. It's not a popular move in Britain. Of course, when a prime minister loses a parliamentary vote, it's generally a much bigger deal than when a president loses a vote in Congress, in part because the American separation of powers makes it possible for Congress to be run by a different party, whereas in England, with the fused system, the executive sits within the legislature, and that means that David Cameron put some of his authority on the line. I don't mean he put his authority on the line, because he'd have had to resign if he did, but nonetheless, this was a very big deal. What does it mean in terms of Syria? Well, by the looks of it, it means that the president is going to go it alone. And it is somewhat ironic, whether he's making the right or the wrong decision, that a move that so lambasted George W. Bush as some sort of unilateralist may well be going into Syria without the British, without the UN, and without Congress, which is not, of course, what happened with Iraq.
Well, on to martini number two now, and I referred to the president's interview with PBS yesterday as it related to his ever-evolving and kind of equivocating Syria policy. But there was another aspect of the interview as well, and it kind of dovetailed off of the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, and that was pushing for economic opportunity and progress and jobs and so forth. And the president, without actually labeling it the war on poverty, referred to the war on poverty and said that there were critics back then who said that that was wrong for the government to get involved and to help poor people and struggling people and minorities. And he says that that argument still comes from the right, that there's too much government and that the free market should work its magic. And here's how he explains that that's wrong.
If, in fact, people start thinking the government's the problem instead of the solution, then what that leaves you is whatever the marketplace does on its own. And what we've seen is a marketplace that increasingly produces very unequal results. And it disempowers our capacity for common action to do something about poverty, to do something to help middle-class families.
Common action, the exact verbiage that is opposite of what Ronald Reagan said in 1981 about government being the problem rather than the solution. Charlie, at least he's putting his cards on the table, but man, he really does think government's the answer here.
He's been putting his cards on the table since that first inauguration speech. If you remember, he came out with a full-throated progressive agenda. Where he's slightly changed in the last 6 months is that he's not cloaking it anymore in the guise of liberty. He's not pretending that big government is somehow the American libertarian ideal. I mean, what he said in that clip, and indeed what he said in his speech, is that people are unempowered if they can't get the government to do things for them, which really is, as you say, the opposite of what I believe. And again, on the right, he said, people who are criticizing the war on poverty. Well, that's why I'm on the right. The war on poverty was disastrously conceived and has been a disaster. It's wasted unbelievable amounts of money. It hasn't done anything like what it sought to do. The war on drugs, the war on poverty. Really, when America declares war on almost anything, it seems, it ends up, domestically at least, it ends up as a failure. It does astonish me, again, with this president. Something I think probably conservatives don't say enough is this is a man who is seen or was seen as being very cool, as being able to tap into the hopes and dreams of younger people and people who weren't necessarily used to being involved in politics. He has great graphic design. You know, he's the subject of many memes, and he's always talking about going forward and looking forward. And yet, really, his political agenda is a combination of maintaining the status quo as defined in the mid-1930s and building on the failed programs of the mid-1960s and Lyndon Johnson. There's nothing forward-looking whatsoever about this president. There's nothing radical about this president.
Fortunately for him, and unfortunately for those of us who love freedom, he's very actively putting together enough people who are dependent on government that even if people are demoralized by his ideology, there's nothing they can do about it because he's established conditions where they're dependent on government and they feel like they might not have a way out of it.
Yes. And what's possibly more worrying than being physically dependent on government, although that is a big problem, is the attempt to change the reflexive instinct of a country. My colleague, or ex-colleague rather, Dan Foster, put this very well. He said that you can have second-order desires for a country. And what he means by that is, much as a drug addict is addicted to drugs but wants not to be. In other words, there is an overwhelming desire not to be addicted to drugs, but it is beaten by the current reality. I am worried about the United States in that although at the moment it still maintains enough of its old frontier, individualist, rugged self, I'm worried that it will go down the road that my country of birth did, which is that if anything happens that is bad or is a challenge, people immediately think, well, what is the government going to do? That's the instinctive response. And the president is actively encouraging that. And I'm afraid that way lies decline and stagnation and Sweden.
On to martini number three now. And we had a number of good options for this one. But whenever Chris Matthews hands you a gem, you've got to go with it. And Charlie, he gave us a great one. Chris Matthews, who, of course, had almost nothing ever good to say about George W. Bush, certainly as it related to the Iraq War, now trying to cobble together an explanation for why we should support Obama when it comes to Syria. His ultimate point at the end of this rant, which we cut off the clip before we get to, is that there needs to be a deterrent for those who would use weapons of mass destruction. He talks about Syria, obviously, and obviously Iran, if it ever fully develops a nuclear weapon. But here's what he said in the lead up to that.
If you basically lie, put down a red line and say, don't use chemical weapons, and it's been enforced in the Western community and around the world, international community for decades, don't use chemical weapons. We didn't use them in World War II. Hitler didn't use them.
Really? Really? We didn't use chemical weapons, but we used WMD, if you count the nuclear weapons we dropped on Japan. And obviously, I think there's millions and millions of people in Nazi-controlled territories that would beg to differ on the use of chemical weapons there, wouldn't you say, Charlie?
Well, I certainly would. It's probably worth putting this into the context of the constant decline of MSNBC into a straight-up propaganda network. And you have the Ed show the other day trying to convince everybody in the first half of the show that conservatives were the new Confederates, and in the second half of the show that it was conservatives who were trying to push the president to go to war in Syria, which is just flat out untrue. This morning, MSNBC had decided that when you really looked at it and when you really examined it, the United States operationally didn't need any allies. I mean, maybe they would even be a bit of a drag. And yesterday you have Chris Matthews, who has decided that there is nothing to do but to defend the administration, making the case and going straight to a reductio ad Hitlerum that didn't even work. The First World War was obviously horrific with its chemical weapons and biological weapons and so forth, and everybody remembers this. And there was a horror of that being repeated during the Second World War. In England, every child was issued a gas mask and training was done at school. Of course, Hitler never actually invaded England or dropped chemical weapons on England. He did, however, use Zyklon B on 6 million Jews, which one would imagine Chris Matthews knows full well. as I say, I don't think that Chris Matthews sat down and thought through, what can I say? Well, I know that Hitler did this. I'm just going to say that he didn't. I think that they're so desperate over there to find a way to defend the president on something that would have been indefensible if a Republican were in the White House, that they're saying anything without thinking. And it's sad.
As you mentioned before, it's not only par for the course for Matthews, who's been shooting from the lip without thinking for a long time. It's completely pervasive of the network now. It wasn't that long ago where you could actually go there and get some real news. But that's a hopeless cause now, I think.
It's declined. It's quite amazing, actually, to watch. There was a time when it was a legitimate complaint to make that Fox had a conservative bias, because it does have a conservative bias. MSNBC then reached parity with Fox, and I have no issue with that for what it's worth. If you look at American history, the notion of all media being somehow neutral is anathemic. The founding fathers wouldn't have known what you were talking about. You look at the 1800 election and the partisan papers at the time. I don't mind having a conservative-leaning network and a progressive-leaning network. But MSNBC has really moved from being a progressive-leaning network to being a combination of the race channel, which is all they ever discuss. Every single thing is to do with race. And the unhinged channel. And Chris Matthews is really the leading exponent of unhinged television at the moment.
And there's hardly a conservative in sight. Fox, as you mentioned, clearly tilts to the right, but they do have quite a few debates on there, bringing quite a few people who defend the administration on a variety of issues, and you
sure
almost never, ever see that on MSNBC.
No, well, if you look at Abby Huntsman, who replaced S.E. Cupp on The Cycle every day, she's not a conservative. She calls herself a Republican, so be it. I'm not going to correct her on that. But she's certainly not a conservative. We have this on all day here. I don't watch it, but in the media room, we have people watching it all day. And Andrew Johnson, who works there, said she's said one single conservative thing since she started. So the one conservative that they did have, S.E. Cupp, on a frequent basis, has left, and they've replaced her with another yes woman.
And the ratings reflect it. That's the
true
silver lining for those of us who deplore what they're all about over there. Charlie, thank you once again very much for filling in for Jim. Great job, and have a fabulous Labor Day weekend.
Absolutely, and you have a great weekend.
Thank you, sir. Charlie Cook of National Review in for Jim Garrity. We'll be off Monday in observance of Labor Day, but Jim and I will be here on Tuesday. Join us then for the next 3 Martini Lunch.